What do you need to focus on to keep moving? And almost more importantly, what do you not need to focus on? Not time to focus on trust. If you focus on trust, it will stop your healing process.
Yes.
Trust is not something you give after betrayal, something that he earns over a long period of time. This is not the time to focus on forgiveness. And we get a lot of pressure as women to forgive right away. Just forgive them and move on. Put it in the past. Not how it works. This is not time to focus on your husband or your partner's emotions. You're supposed to put yourself aside and put others first. Then you're supposed to comfort and all of that. Not right now and not with him. If you focus on him, everyone's healing process shuts off.
Hello. On today's podcast is Tammy Gustafson. She is the woman that each of us needed through all four phases of our healing journey. And she is a returning guest and hopefully continues to return to us. Don't you agree, Chris?
She did promise that she would.
She did.
I think the odds are good.
I think they are too. She is such an articulate and wise woman, like I said, that all of us needed through all of the phases that we went through in our healing process. I wish I'd had her from the very beginning, especially after listening to today's podcast.
Absolutely. I would say that Tammy is the epitome of one of my favorite phrases. Let's see what I did there. One of my favorite phrases is make your mess your message. She went through betrayal trauma with her husband, and now she and her husband Nathaniel are both certified sex addiction and betrayal recovery counselors, and she's as well a coach. So yeah, she is inspiring that way. She has truly made her mess her message, and now she has if Satan only knew what he was doing when he messed with Tammy. She has now become a huge nemesis of his. So well done, Tammy. So ladies, you're going to hear from Tammy the four healing phases that she created and that she uses as a model of therapy with her clients. And those four phases are: the first one is reveal. The second one is rumble. Phase three is realign. And phase four is rebuild. And, Jen and I have been, Jen, you've been in this betrayal world for over 12 years. I'm coming up on 5 years. We've both gone to school, earned certifications. We've done a ton of studying and learning and sitting with some of the amazing people in this field. We've learned a lot. And yet I learned so many new things from Tammy, even like new concepts, like in the rebuild, you'll hear me talk about that, like, oh, light bulb moment. And then also articulation happened in this podcast. I was able to get some clarity from both you and Tammy on concepts that I fumble with, and I have a gift of being good with words usually, but you both articulated some of these concepts so clearly and concisely for me. That was a blessing.
I'm so glad. I am so glad. We are truly better together. Mm. And when Tammy comes to the table, holy smokes, this podcast could have been all day.
Yeah.
And for the sake of all of you listening, you're welcome. It was not.
Yeah, we stopped it at an hour.
We did.
But this is why we will have her back again, because she is so rich in information and knowledge and wisdom. She's got some great spiritual gifts that you're gonna get to be the benefactors of today.
Yeah. So thank you for being here. We are glad you're here. You are not alone. And may today's podcast remind you of just that.
Mm-hmm. Enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast. This is your place to reclaim your life after betrayal. I'm your host, Chris Rocha, and I'm here with my co-host, Jen Howie.
You know, I was going to try to come up with something witty just for this moment, and I totally forgot to do it. So, hi, everyone. I have nothing witty to offer you.
You're just keeping it real. I love it. And that's your catchphrase, relentlessly real. And there you have it.
That is very true, whether you like it or not.
Great. Well, thanks for that little giggle, Jen. So today we have our first ever return guest, and we are so excited, legit, to have Tammy Gustafson back with us. She has so much to offer. This will not be the last time that she's on the podcast. I know it, because there's just so much, just a wealth of information to cover with Tammy. So Jen, would you introduce the guest for us?
Well, she is a wonderful, beautiful woman on the inside and the outside. Her name is Tammy Gustafson, and she is a betrayal trauma coach. She is a writer and a speaker. She's also a licensed professional counselor, and she specializes in PTSD and trauma. And she's been doing this for more than 13 years. She is probably one of the more brilliant minds that I know. And you're going to get to know some of that today as well. So here on the podcast today is who's becoming, I would say, a pretty good friend, Tammy Gustafson. Welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me and for that very kind introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, welcome back, Tammy. We are so excited to learn more from you about your phases of betrayal. So let's start out by having you share with our listeners and with us, what are your four betrayal healing phases and how are they helpful for betrayed partners?
Yeah, well, I came up with these phases kind of based off of my own experience going through betrayal, and then also just my clinical experience of walking women through this process. And I think there are a lot of wonderful phases out there that kind of help conceptualize this. Mine is a little bit unique in that instead of looking at just the betrayed partner's her healing journey by herself, and kind of pulling her out of the relationship and focusing on how she heals, what I'm looking at is how does she heal and navigate within what's going on in the relationship. So the phases really follow the relationship pattern. And in the end, whether she stays with her partner or not, whether or not she gets divorced, like it includes all of those. But it's really looking at this 30,000 foot overview of what happens within the context of the relationship after betrayal, and what are some things that are going to help her and keep her moving along the way and keep her from getting stuck, because we all know that this process and this healing is long enough and hard enough that I don't want women to get stuck. So the four phases, that how I've developed them, is the first one is reveal, and that is when everything blows up. That's when there's a discovery or when there's a disclosure. And this is the initial period where she is trying to get the truth of her life and of her relationship.
Like D-Day, how we call Discovery Day, D-Day. This is the D-Day area or time frame. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Phase two, I call rumble. And that the shifting point of moving into phase two is either when she has a full disclosure and she knows the truth now, or it's become clear that she will not get the truth. And so either way, that's kind of the shift into the second phase, which is really more of the wrestling phase. It's do I want to stay? Do I want to go? Setting up boundaries, finding her strength, you know, waiting to see, like, is he going to do the work? Is he not going to do the work? What's going to happen? It's that really messy middle area. And then phase three starts when it becomes clear to her what direction the relationship is heading. Is it going towards redemption or healing? Is it going towards divorce or permanent separation? Or this middle ground of kind of being roommates, where he's not doing fantastic work, but she doesn't want to leave the relationship. And that phase, I used to call it resolution, and I am now, you guys are the first ones to hear.
This is the great interview. Great reveal.
Drum roll. Yep. Bring it.
I'm now calling this phase realign.
Nice.
Realign. Really, she's kind of, she's realigning her life and her expectations to what things are going to look like. And then phase four is called rebuild. And this is a phase that all women, no matter what happens with their relationship or not, they eventually come to. And this is where she kind of shifts and she goes, man, I need to focus on me. And I need to focus on healing and my future. And so this is actually the last time I was here with you guys. This is where we camped, was in phase four and rebuild. And so today we're going to go through all four stages and phases and unpack those.
I love that. I think back to when we started with phase four, and now I realize that there's a lot of beauty in the fact that we actually started there, because it really gave women hope as to, okay, this is what I'm moving toward. And now we're going to dive into, oh, how do I get there? And starting with phase one, we're talking about reveal. You know, as well as I do, that there is a lot of chaos. And there's so much trying to keep your head above water in this stage, just survival stage, really. I would love to hear more about this phase one, and what are some realistic expectations while in the reveal stage? We need guidelines, right? Because I think sometimes we try to do phase two, or even to some degree phase three actions, when we really have to just get our head above water at this point and survive to get to the next phase. So what does that look like?
I just wanted to pop in and say real quick that phase one reveal for me was riddled with, and this is so common, but I'm just saying it for the listeners out there. I went through this too. I say that I was vibrating with stress. My limbic brain, the amygdala, I was in survival mode, but I was numb. I couldn't think straight. I had fog brain. I was like, it was this horrible clash of, am I in a movie? Am I in a nightmare? I can't wake up from what is happening. The whole getting hit by a Mack truck. And so, I just wanted to say that the reveal stage was awful. It was chaos. I think that as I look back on me 4.5 years ago, I had a very low resilience level. I had not developed the ability to be resilient in the midst of trauma. And I don't know if that affects the reveal phase, but I just wanted to throw that in before you dive in. So thanks.
Yeah, gosh, I don't expect anyone to feel resilient in phase one, because like you're talking about, it is like getting hit by a Mack truck. And it is so disorienting, and the shock of it all. Now, some women might have an idea of it, but for a lot of women, there's a lot of shock in here. And even within the discovery or the disclosure process and going through a full disclosure, perhaps a polygraph, there is so much that kind of gets put on her of all the information of what's been happening. And that absorbing that process, absorbing it into your mind, into your heart, even into your body, is so difficult. So Chris, I'm so glad you talked about that, because that the physical even ramifications along with the emotional ramifications are huge, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of women shake a lot, in the beginning with all of it. The lack of sleep, the emotions feeling like they are on steroids, where it's like you're rapid cycling through anger and sadness and hopelessness. And one moment you want him to hold you and comfort you, and the next minute you never want to see him again, and that feels crazy making.
Yeah.
But you're not crazy. It's totally normal. Mm-hmm. It's totally normal. And I wish that we could say, like, for these phases, we can check off the boxes. But unfortunately, the reality is for a lot of women, they may be moving through and then there's a relapse and then they're coming back here.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the cumulative effect of relapses on trauma can actually make them even more damaging and more impactful. So just having a lot of compassion on yourself, if you're in this phase in particular, that man, it is everything. Everything that you're experiencing like that is normal.
Yeah. Normal. Yeah. And it's not just the relapses. I think about the women who are experiencing
their husband's responses to the revealing. It could be a drip disclosure.
Mm-hmm. Gaslighting.
Gaslighting. Saying they're going to follow through and not. It's just, it often feels like, I think I liken it to sort of slipping down a mountain. Mm-hmm. Or like you're trying to rock climb and you're just trying to find a ledge to hold onto and your fingers keep slipping. The reveal stage is really painful. And I think a lot of people will often ask, how long does this stage last?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? I am not going to give an answer for that. I get those questions all the time.
Yep.
And I think you just can't, because it's so personal. Because if he is doing hard work and he is leaning in and he is working on a disclosure and he is working on getting truthful, because let's be honest, there's two parts of this. Whenever there's acting out, there's lying.
Yep.
And there's deception, and they have to break of both. Just stopping the acting out is not enough. They also have to break with lying. Mm-hmm. But if he's doing good work, then you may continue to move through. But if he's not, mm-hmm. and it's continuing to be drip disclosure, like it could go on forever, you know?
Yeah.
Now, eventually you might need to cut it off and say, okay, I'm just not going to get the full truth, and move on from there. But I do think that there are a couple things that are really helpful. And one of the things that I'm passionate about with these phases that I've developed is to help women focus on, like, in this phase, what do you need to focus on to keep moving? And almost more importantly, what do you not need to focus on? Mm-hmm. What are the things that if you focus on them in certain phases, they will get you stuck? And so the things to focus on getting the truth, And with that, you're going to need help. Mm-hmm. He is not, 99% of men are not going to come clean with all the details, everything, unless they have somebody who is helping them through this process. So finding somebody who gets it and who can support you. And like Chris, you were saying, the gaslighting is usually off the charts in this phase. And so really focusing on getting the truth. And that can be, for some women, they want all the details. For others, they don't want all the details. But looking inside yourself of going, what do you need? Nobody can tell you what you need, like you deciding for yourself. And just know that if you want all the details, once you have the details, you have the details. Yeah. But I think it's really important in this phase that women are allowed to speak up and say, this is what I want and this is what I need. I don't think it's helpful to overly protect her from trauma. Because trauma you can heal from, but there is a window of time where you can really step in and get your voice and have that agency, and that will last you and serve you for the rest of your life.
I'd like to ask a clarifying question on that. How does a woman know what is too much to know? Because I would think that I want to know everything. I want to know all the details. Some people want to know the details of the type of pornography. Some women want to know just details. Like, as a woman, someone who is learning to trust her gut, maybe for the first time, how does she know how much is benefiting her versus this is hurting me? I need to back off of knowing this level of detail.
I think that's trial and error. I think first of all, you go inside and you ask yourself, like, what do you want to know? Like, I wanted to know everything. And I don't regret it. Mm-hmm. I would not have understood what I was dealing with had I not had the details that I got.
Yeah.
But details are painful, but you can heal.
Yeah.
It is possible to heal from trauma, right? It's possible to heal those details. It might just take longer and be harder.
Yeah.
So I would say trust yourself. And if you get going and you're like, whoa, that's too much. Okay.
Yeah. Anyways. I will say this much. Like you said, once the details are out there, you can't take them back. Something I think I knew. I mean, if my husband had been physical with anybody, I definitely wanted to know. But the one thing I don't want to know is I don't want to know if he fantasizes about my friends or my sister.
Great.
Because
so that's good that
changes,
you know that.
Right. All the interactions. And I was afraid because I'm like, I kind of do want to know that. But I'm like, no, because then I have potential for losing everything, all the support, because now that's tainted every interaction. But it took me a while to come to that conclusion, to realize, okay, I mean, if he had been physical with them, I would want to know. But if he's struggling in his mind, I just think that's the one thing, man, that is the one thing I just don't think I could recover from.
Which is a great segue for my question, Tammy, is there anything that women can do in this phase to prevent PTSD or to maybe eliminate it or even make it less impactful? Maybe there's going to be some form of PTSD that she's going to experience, but is there anything that women listening to your voice right now can do in this phase to reduce PTSD?
I think that's a great question. First of all, not everyone is going to get PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody actually experiences it as trauma because
that's
we can all go through the same thing. And for some people, it lands as trauma, and for others, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So not everyone will develop that. But I think for everybody, one of the huge keys for this is focusing on your nervous system early on.
Great.
I did not do that. I did not focus on my nervous system for about 6 years afterwards. So I was a late bloomer when it comes to that. But all of it, the fight or flights, the freeze, the fawn, whatever that is, the feeling out of control, which we all have felt, right? All of that is tied to our nervous system. And the nervous system kicks that into gear whenever there's perceived threat, and there's tremendous threat. It's not perceived when this happens, right? There is threat to everything. So, but if you can focus on calming your nervous system early on, it is going to help this entire process. And there's a lot of ways to calm your nervous system, but I think you have to find what works for you. It's kind of with all of this, there's no right way. There's no one thing to do. Neurofeedback is one way. For me, fascia work, I talk about this a lot. Fascia is the interconnected tissue in our body, which connects our joints to our bones, to our muscles. And it is part of our nervous system as well. And it's also part of what traps trauma in the body. So so unwinding the nervous system, you know, you can Google myofascial release. For me, energy work, Reiki, calms me even faster than fascia does. But for some people, energy work sounds scary. So that's okay. If it's scary, then don't do it, right? But there's a lot of things like that. There's a lot of programs now that you can Google about calming your nervous system. And I think that's a great way to help calm and process early on. All throughout, actually.
Mm-hmm. Box breathing works for me. My daughters use that when they're stressed out. And this is what I think we would call this self-care, right? And this is where we talk with our clients and our group members about you have to find out what kind of self-care works for your body, for the body that you are in, and for your mind and your spirit. So there's lots of forms of that. But yeah, thank you. That's really helpful. I love myofascial release. Oh my goodness, is that a game changer? I will say the fascia work, my massage therapist uses cups to do that. There's lots of cupping. It hurts. I'm just going to warn you all, but you feel like a new spring chicken when you walk out having done that work. It's worth it. Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't realize that was connected to the nervous system.
It is. It's also connected to your organs as well. It's what makes every organ keep its shape. So when you really consider, if you really take some deep dives, it affects every organ in our body because of that information system that the nervous system uses to communicate to our body.
That's fascinating. That's good to know. And friends, if you didn't know, Jen is a massage therapist. She's actually a trainer. She teaches other massage therapists. So she is our resident medical expert. Thank you, Jen. Thank
That's
you for
awesome.
That. You know, we're bougie here. We got important people. Tammy, when do women transition into phase two, the rumble phase?
Well, before we go there, can I throw really quickly in what not to focus on in phase one?
Yes, please.
Okay. So this one, there's three that I really focus on. First of all, not time to focus on trust.
Not time
to focus on trust. And trust, if you focus on trust and just, I, you know, a lot of times I hear, well, I just need to learn how to trust him and move on. it will stop your healing process.
Yes.
Trust is not something you give after betrayal. Trust is something that he earns over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Okay. And similarly to this, this is not the time to focus on forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Okay. We get a lot of pressure as women, and particularly women of faith, to forgive right away. Just forgive them and move on. Put it in the past. It's not how it works. Okay. Forgiveness is down the road, and you can trust that it is going to come up when it's time, but now it's not the time. And you have to know, first of all, what you are forgiving. And forgiveness is really on the other side of anger too. There's a lot of grieving that needs to take place. So trust and forgiveness are the two ones that I see women jump to quickly in this phase, and they will shut off your healing process. The other one is that this is not time to focus on your husband or your partner's emotions. And again, a lot of times we have this caretaker, either expectation or perhaps naturally inside of us that, gosh, if you see somebody in pain, you're supposed to help them. You're supposed to put yourself aside and put others first, and you're supposed to comfort and all of that. Not right now. Not right now, and not with him. Because what happens is that if you focus on his emotions of, oh, he feels so bad, or oh, he feels shame, or oh, he's, you know, regretful or remorseful. If you focus on him, you get out of your shoes and you get into his shoes. And what also happens, what I see, is that when that happens, everyone's healing process shuts off. His shuts off because he is not supposed to be focused on his emotions right now and how upset he is. He's supposed to be focused on you, the one he hurt. The marriage healing shuts down because of the same reason, and you're out of your shoes. So it's really important that you stay in your shoes, that you focus on your emotions and your grief. You lean into that. And so those are the three areas that I see women get stuck.
Excellent. I've never heard that before, and that makes so much sense. Yeah, especially the emotion part. I knew the trust, I knew the forgiveness, but the emotions, yeah. And that's a go-to question for me. What emotion are you feeling right now?
Yeah.
So not the time in phase one.
I really do want to move on. I promise. I just have one question. The women also have a tendency to rely on their spouse. I'm glad you mentioned that trust isn't a part of the equation initially, because many women rely on their spouse to do X, Y, and Z so they feel two. Three. There's no equation there. You know what I mean? And so those who tend to trust too quickly, but also those who are relying on him to build trust so that they can be okay. That's, would you say that's impossible? I feel like that's impossible in phase one. He's not going to earn your trust, and it's futile to have him try to earn it in phase one. Would you agree?
Well, he needs to work hard, period. Like, he needs to try to be working on that. But yeah, it is impossible in phase one for trust to be rebuilt, because phase one is all about getting the truth. You don't even know all of the truth right now. So there's no way. Trust is not part of the equation.
Trust is not part of phase one.
No.
Don't seek there's for no it. Way. Don't wait for it.
Don't expect it.
And I think also what you're getting at, Jen, is I know I felt this way, and I think every woman I've ever talked to feels this way when they've gone through this, is I want him to do X, Y, or Z so that I feel safe and better.
Yes.
And that it's totally normal. Totally normal. And this is actually something I was thinking about yesterday, and this is something I couldn't have heard in phase one, but like now being so far out, looking at it and going, you know what? The safety after betrayal actually comes in with yourself, and if you're a person of faith, with God first. But even women of faith, they jump not too soon. Hear me out on this. They jump too soon to either, I need him to be safe so that I feel safe, or I need to feel safe with God. And they leave themselves out. And that is a huge component of your healing.
Could you say that one more time?
I'll try. So women of faith, Christian women in particular, we're taught that either we focus on him and his safety or him being safe so that I feel safe, which is not possible in phase one, right? Mm-hmm. Or jump straight to, well, I just need to find my safety in God. Okay. But by doing so, it leaves out the whole relationship with yourself and you feeling safe with yourself and safe yes. in your body. And yes. let me tell you, when it is possible to feel safe in your body, and it is so, it feels so good, and it's so important long term.
Okay, friends, we're going to have Tammy back two more times to go over phase two and phase three. And then we'll refer you back to the episode where she covered phase four, because there's just so much meat right here. I'm just thinking about, Jen's heard me say so many times that the single most important thing or the best thing I did for myself to recover well from betrayal trauma, besides joining a group that was amazing, was diving into my identity. Who am I? What are my gifts, my strengths, my talents, my purpose, my calling? Who did God create me to be? And when I spent time researching that and doing some classes around that and being able to then articulate, this is who I am, not only did it help me to put clearer boundaries down, to say yes to the right things and no to the right things, but it gave me confidence in who I was. And I didn't I became so much less focused on him and felt so good in my own skin. So you just kind of gave me a piece as to why that worked. Yeah. That we have to be comfortable in our own skin, find our spine, be able to throw our shoulders back, put our chin up and stand firm. Right? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think this is also where nervous system stuff comes in, because mm-hmm. I didn't really start to feel safe and calm until my nervous system was calmed.
Uh-huh.
I felt safe.
Jen's saying hallelujah right now with her hands up. That's right. Preach. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, but that relationship with yourself is crucial. And it takes a huge blow as well with betrayal trauma. I mean, first of all, just body. I mean, instantly we all go to, my boobs weren't big enough. My stomach wasn't flat enough. I wasn't, you know, personality. Like, it automatically goes to that. And we kind of attack ourselves. That's normal. We all do it. Mm-hmm. But it's hard on ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And then that feeling of, like, a lot of women struggle with. I always said if he did something like this, I would be out. And yeah, I didn't same. Leave.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So now I feel like I betrayed myself, yeah. right? So there is this whole healing with yourself that I think sometimes we lose in all the talk about betrayal. But that it's just so critical. And really long term, that is where the ultimate healing lies.
Excellent. Thank you, Tammy. Wow. Okay. I feel like we can put a bow on phase one now and move on to phase two, Rumble, but I'm going to feel free to come back if we need to. Because again, there's so much richness in that phase one. All right. So Tammy, talk to us about when you see women moving on to phase two.
Yeah. Phase two is really when you have the truth, when you feel it in your gut, like I have it. Or when you're like, he's not going to give it to me. He's not mm-hmm. going to give it to me. And I know he hasn't given me the truth. And I credit Jake Porter with this. He summed this up beautifully in an interview I did with him one time. And he said that when you don't get the truth, you are not stuck. Okay. It's not that you can't heal from there. It's that the fact that he won't give you the truth becomes the new reality that you stand on.
Oh, wow.
And that becomes the reality that you move forward with.
Wow. That okay, this kind of came out of left field for me just now. I hear all the time, and I think I truly believed in the beginning that until I got the truth that I was stuck, that he was keeping me stuck, but that is so empowering. It's information.
Yes.
To move forward with.
Yeah. Your reality becomes, I will never get the truth. And my husband, my partner, has chosen not to give it to me. And now I'm going to stand on that and I'm going to move forward.
Wow. And what do you do with that? What are your choices? And you have choices.
Wow, and you have choices. Good. Exactly. Which leads into whether or not he has given you the full truth or not, you grieve. You grieve. And there's often this period of time, this small window of time, and I don't have a word for it, maybe somebody does, but when you get the truth and you maybe just got the disclosure and it's just there's just kind of this like pause, this like silence in your soul as everything kind of soaks in and you're like, man, what does this mean?
Feels hollow.
What do I do? It feels hollow. Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is where grieving, how do you process this? How do you heal through it? The grieving process is the healing process. So you feel your emotions. You allow that anger to come. Anger is so important, guys. So, so important. You have to have anger.
Tell us why.
Yeah. Well, if you think about the stages of grief that a lot of us are familiar with, the shock and denial. And then you have this kind of middle part of sadness, anger, and bargaining. And then at the end, there's acceptance. We can't choose acceptance. We can't jump to acceptance. Acceptance is a byproduct of this middle work, really, of the sadness, the anger, and the bargaining. And bargaining, that one always was a little confusing to me. But how I view bargaining is it's, well, at least he's a good dad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
At least.
Check.
At least it was.
He's a good provider.
He's a good provider. At least it was one woman and not 10. At least it wasn't a prostitute. At least it was quote unquote just born. That's how I kind of view bargaining, right? It's the minimizing it to try to, it's the minimizing it to kind of lessen the pain. Mm-hmm. But that part aside, that'll kind of creep in here and there. But really the core of grieving is this sadness and this anger, right? And the thing is that you have to have both. A lot of times what we do is we gravitate towards one and we kind of don't really want the other one. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women, especially from faith backgrounds, have always been told, don't be angry. I mean, it was like the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not be angry for females.
Oh, wait, are you saying that's not in the Bible? What?
So it's like a lot of times, a lot of women are disconnected from their anger or they're afraid of their anger, or maybe mm-hmm. they had a parent who was scary. And mm-hmm. so what can happen is they take anger and they pull it out and be like, I'm just not going to do anger. But what happens if you pull one out, you cycle in the other and you never move through, you never process through to get to acceptance, to get to mm-hmm. quote unquote, the other side. Or I went to anger right away. Anger was my friend. I felt powerful and whatnot. But if you pull out sadness long-term, you're going to cycle in anger.
Yeah,
you have to have both.
I anger was something that was not an emotion that was afforded to me growing up. That was reserved mm-hmm. for my dad or for other people. So I decided at one point, I'm going to touch anger. I'm just going to touch it with my big toe and just kind of tap into it. And my fear was that if I touched it, it would suck me in and I would like lose control. And I'm here to tell you, that's exactly what happened. The very thing that I feared happened, but let me just tell you, it needed to happen.
I'm picturing the Hulk right now.
I was a little hulky. Hulk
did
smash.
You turn into the
yeah,
Hulk?
I really mm-hmm. did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if I hadn't have done that, Tammy, you mentioned the term trial and error. It really is trial and error. So I pulled back from it. Because I got kind of sucked in real fast. And I pulled back from it and then allowed myself to ease toward it. And the more I eased toward it, the more I was able to access a little bit of it with my words. Well, initially with my thoughts and then with my words. And so I really had to, it's different. Like you jumped right into it. I went into it, did the very thing I was afraid of, but it's still survivable. Even if you do get pulled in like I did, it's still survivable. But it can be scary for many of us that have never been allowed to even touch that word, let alone experience it. But it is trial and error. So you have to go and try it, even if it's scary. And I will say right now, as someone who was afraid that it would pull them in, it didn't pull me in for life. It didn't pull me into bitterness. It didn't pull me into domestic violence. It pulled me, the pulling in was internal, a little external, but some internal as well. But I would say if you do get pulled into it, make sure that you are with a therapist during this time. Mm. Someone like Tammy who can in their professional life has worked with people who are experiencing this level of trauma. Because sometimes when we get pulled into it, we immediately want to back out and never touch it again. But with the right guidance and counseling, navigating anger is very so doable healthy. And incredible. I would not be where I am today without having learned how to touch anger. Mm-hmm. So if you're scared of it, that's okay. That's okay.
And I just have to say, Jen, you were my group leader at the time. And I remember saying to you, oh, I'm not angry. I'm sad. And that was accurate. But like you, anger wasn't something I tapped into. I learned early on in life to morph. I was a people pleaser and to be whatever the person I was with needed me to be. That was my go-to to feel safe and secure. Cause I wanted security more than I wanted love or respect. I wanted security and I would do anything to get that within reason, of course. But one of those things I did was I was never angry. I was always pleasant. I was, you know, I always had my pink cardigan on, so to speak. I was, you know, trying to be the Proverbs 31 woman and anger isn't beautiful. And no, maybe it isn't, but it is in a way. It's formidable and it's necessary. So I remember saying to you, Jen, oh, I'm not angry. And you said, oh, you will be. hang in there. It's coming. And I think it took me, it was like a year. I remember around a year and 3 months somewhere. Uh-huh. It was just a bit after a year. Finally, I was like, I finally got angry. proud of myself.
In all honesty, my counselor had said that to me previously. I said, I'm not angry. I denied anger for a very long time. She goes, I'll tell you what, when you finally get angry, give me a call. We will go rent a hotel room. And we will scream into pillows and we will, you know,
rage room.
She goes, I know you're not angry. And she goes, but she told me when you do touch that anger, let me know. We'll go deal with it together. How beautiful was that?
That's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful.
All right. Sorry. Getting us sidetracked. Sorry.
Yeah. Hi, Tammy. Welcome to the show. We're so glad it's your turn to talk now.
No, I love what you guys are saying. And I talk about anger a lot because I just think it's so misunderstood. And I think, you know, all emotions, there are no bad emotions. Their emotions are indicators. They are telling us something. And for anger, anger is protective. Anger is saying that something is wrong and that there needs to be action taken. And so it gives you the strength to set boundaries. It gives you the strength to stand up for yourself. And anger and self-worth go hand in hand.
Whoa. Really? Wow.
They go hand in hand. So if I have a woman who is struggling with self-worth, I will immediately ask her, what's her relationship with her anger? And she's like, I don't like my anger. Because anger is part of that. It's that inside of you that's like, wait a second, no, this isn't okay. Like, I don't deserve to be treated like this.
Yes.
That like strength, that chutzpah, whatever you want to call it, that's part of anger. And I would say, I agree, Jen, there are a lot of women who are really scared of their anger and they're afraid it'll explode on them. But even as you're saying, I was like, huh, I wonder what that really looks like. Because here's kind of my boundaries with anger. Is you don't want to rage. You don't want to feel like you were losing control. You know, you got to be able to keep it away from kids, right?
Good.
You got to be able to do it. It's if you're screaming at your husband in the front yard, then that's something you might want to be like, okay, I need to maybe pull this back a little bit. So like when you do it, being able to have control over that, best not to do property damage. I threw things. I think everybody gets thrown things. And best not to hit your husband, because if you do, then there's shame in you. And then there's all that. Other than that, I don't care if women yell. In fact, if they don't, I'm like, maybe you need to touch a little bit more. I don't care if there's yelling, if they're screaming. I don't care if she swears. I never swore before betrayal. I swore like a sailor afterwards. I would get to the place where I was like, isn't there any other words? Because these words, I've used them all and they're not strong enough.
These words are tired. Yeah.
I tell people sometime, and I don't know if I would stand this, but like, I couldn't have healed without the F-bomb. Like I could not have done it.
Me too.
And so we have to give permission that this process is not going to be, it's not going to be a nice, clean process. It is messy.
It's not cute.
It is messy and you are finding your voice. But one thing our counselor said to Nathaniel, and he agrees with him now, he's like, you are doing her, or Tammy is doing you a favor by being angry. Because part of the core of acting out for men is not facing negative emotions, yes, probably stemming from childhood. And so I was giving him an opportunity and a crash course to stand up and to learn how to deal with negative emotions real quick.
Yeah.
And so a lot of women are afraid that they're going to hurt the process, or they are going to hurt their husband, or it's going to shut down his process if they're angry. No. If he's not safe, then you protect yourself. And that may not be a place that you let your anger out. But if he is safe enough, he needs people around him who can help him take that anger. That anger is actually really important for him in his developmental process.
Wow. Yeah. Your anger will either go internal or external. You choose. Yep. You're going to, you know, it'll be stored in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'll also just piggyback on the very last piece here of that. If you are struggling with wanting to scream in front of your children, if you are struggling with wanting to hit your spouse or hurt yourself, pull your hair, or having suicidal thoughts, please reach out to, well, first of all, 911 if you're having suicidal thoughts, but to your therapist, because those are, like Tammy said, very valid emotions and very serious emotions that probably need some guidance to walk through. Mm-hmm. So please reach out to a professional counselor for help if you are struggling in those areas to remain in control while processing anger.
Mm-hmm. We don't want you drowning in the overwhelm of strong emotions you haven't dealt with before.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you said that. And also, I just want to add to it that there's no shame.
No shame.
Mm-hmm. There's
none.
No shame. There are so many women who have done all those things, mm-hmm, and experienced all those things. And just know you're not alone. And this is no shame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No shame.
Nope.
I like that. Might adopt that. No shame zone.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So are we still in the Rumble? Where are we, Tammy?
I'll wrap up Rumble. I think we got the idea. It's finding your voice. It's setting boundaries. It's seeing, is he going to do the work or not? And part of it is going like, okay, ladies, if you have to take a magnifying glass to see if he is doing good work, he is not working hard enough.
Yes.
He is not working hard enough. If you have to be like, well, I think he's not working hard enough.
Yeah.
Okay. You deserve this. And also, I want you to know, getting help again in this phase is so important. Finding a group, if you can. Groups are the way that I think we mourn, that we're able to help process through the sadness and grief, because the mourning is the community aspect, and it's helpful for that. I also want to empower you in this phase that you take what you need. You will have a lot of people giving you a lot of thoughts and a lot of advice, even therapists, even counselors, faith leaders, or whatnot. This is your life. This is your one life to live. So you take what fits you and you throw out the rest. Personally, when I was going through this, I did not listen to all the podcasts. Although, of course, listen to this one. This one's great.
I love that, though. You don't want to fire hose yourself. And I did that to myself. I felt waterboarded. It was too much information, counseling.
If anyone could ever waterboard themselves, that was you, Chris.
That was me. I was trying to heal on a fast track, and it was not the way to do it.
Who's keeping my head underwater? You are.
Yeah.
You are doing that.
Come to find out.
Everybody does that. They want that safety in the books and the podcasts. And those are great. You do that. Not a problem. You do what you need to do. But find, if that gets too much, then you find maybe one or two people that you really align with and you listen to them. But more importantly, you do what you need, despite what anybody else is telling you. You listen to yourself and what you need.
Balance. Absolutely. Thank you.
That's phase two.
That's phase two. Excellent.
All right. So let's talk about phase three then.
Which is phase resolution. It was resolution. It's moving to realign.
Realign. Great. Okay.
So, but in this phase, it's really at the point where you're like, okay, I know. I know where the relationship is headed, or where I want the relationship to head to. Like, you may be like, I'm done. I'm out. Not enough. I'm done, right? So again, just to recap, there's kind of the healing track, there's the divorce or the permanent separation track, and then there's this roommate phase. And for each one of them, just again, a lot of compassion. This is a big transition time, transitioning back to leaning into the relationship when maybe he has done really good work and you're like, ooh, he's safe enough. That is a terrifying process. And on one hand, it's like, well, but this is what I wanted. I wanted it to heal. I wanted him to do all this great work. And this is great. And then you get there and you're like, oh my gosh, I have been protecting myself all this time. And now I'm supposed to open up my heart again.
Ew.
Now I'm supposed to be vulnerable again.
Yeah.
Like, this is terrifying. Mm. So if that's you, just know that's normal. If he's on this path and he starts to become empathetic and your anger shoots through the roof, that's normal. It's like, why did it take this long? Right?
Yeah. I often thought, well, Dan and his stupid empathy, you could take your empathy and eat it for lunch. Cause yes, it was. Yeah. This is legit.
So just know if you're on that track of healing, be very gentle. You can take a step in and a step back. Just notice where he's at. That's a really tender time. For those who go down the divorce track and are like, he's not doing good work. And man, I don't know if I've met many women in this process who wanted to get divorced. Most just want their husband to do the work. Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where they are not, and they just won't do it anymore. And so there's this whole transition of grieving there where now you're not just grieving the betrayal, you are grieving the entire marriage, right? And the transition, and there's a whole mountain that has to be climbed to get to the other side of divorce. But just know that there is good life ahead. There's mm-hmm. good life ahead on the other side of divorce too. Mm-hmm. And then this middle ground of the roommate track. And that's where he's not really doing great work. He's maybe doing just enough to keep her in. And she doesn't want to get divorced, or she doesn't want to leave the relationship. And this group, I have a special place in my heart for this group, because there are a lot of good reasons to stay. Usually it's because of kids mm-hmm. and finances, feeling like I don't have the funds. I don't have the way to get out. And so I just have a lot of compassion, because I think this is an overlooked group and kind of a misunderstood group sometimes. But this is also the group I get most concerned about, because this is a hard place to be. And you've got to, this is a serious taking care of yourself on steroids. Otherwise, your lights will start to dim. And that is the most tragic thing that I think can happen. So, and this isn't a decision for forever, right? You can always change and move and make decisions. But that is phase three. It's this shifting, realigning to the reality of this is where the relationship is going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we've already had an entire podcast on phase four, but for our first time listeners, or for all of us that would love a recap, please give us the lowdown on phase four.
Phase four, I love phase four, because this is like, women will come into my office and they'll just be this organic shift inside of them. Usually it's when they know where their relationship is going, and they come in and they're like, you know what? It's time to focus on me. Mm-hmm. Whether they did a lot of focus on themselves all the way along, or they're just now at the point where it's like, I had abandoned myself that whole time. Now I'm at the point though, that I want myself back. Mm-hmm. I want me back. I need to heal. I need to pick up these pieces, and I need to shift and put my focus forward. And here's the beautiful part. And the hope of all this, all women come in this phase, all women hit phase four, eventually, no matter what the phase of their relationship, you can heal and grow and become stronger in ways you never imagined before.
Mm-hmm. So true.
And there's this thing called post-traumatic growth, where mm-hmm. you can actually become a stronger, more healthy, more alive person than you have ever been. Not even for me, I know that's the case. And, you know, it's not in spite of what I went through, but it's because of what I went through in the journey. I will never, ever be grateful for betrayal. I will never be grateful for it. I will never say it was a good thing. Never. However, who I am now, I don't know if I ever would have become who I am now if I hadn't gone through what I've gone through.
Yeah.
So there is hope and there is light on the other side. And I just want everyone to hear that and know it's possible.
So many of us long, when we start this process, we long for things just to go back to how they were. And then when you are through phase four, or even in phase four, you would never want to be the person that you were before, because you come to know yourself in such a different way. Who you are now would make way different decisions than she ever did before any of this. Mm-hmm. And I, like you, I'm not grateful for the betrayal, for the trauma, but man, I really like who I am today.
That's right.
Way better than I ever liked who I was before. So I suppose that's a little tricky, but here we are to testify, to say it. I think most of us that have done the work would say and align ourselves with that as well.
Yeah. You were pivotal, Tammy, in helping me to rephrase that, because I, on this podcast, in the Get to Know Your Host episode, I say, I'm grateful for betrayal, because I'm not the person I was then. And I love who I am now. And I feel like I know myself better than I ever have. But you said exactly what you just said a moment ago, what you both said. I will never be grateful for the betrayal. I am grateful for the outcome, though. I can at least say, I see what God did there. He didn't cause this. He absolutely did not cause this, but he does use it for our good, for the called, according to his good purpose. And I can see what he did there. I can see how he used it. And like you, Jen, I would not want to go back to that person that I was before. My husband can say the same thing. He is renewed. He is better than he ever has been. He knows himself well. His relationship with the Lord is so tight right now. And we had a good, I'm air quoting that, marriage before. We prided ourselves in never fighting. And what I realized now is we were walking on eggshells. This is a second marriage for both of us. And we were trying so hard not to rock the boat, not to make waves. And boy, you know, we've learned what emotional intimacy is now. And we can make waves and it's okay. It's safe. Mm-hmm. And we know how to handle those conversations and we know how to press in and get through to the other side. And so I am grateful for what it's done to me as an individual, what it's done for him as an individual, and what it's done in our relationship. And yeah, I would never want to go back. This is so much better.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I love the rebuild phase. I love phase four. This is a great place to camp.
Yeah.
I want to build a house here. Yeah.
I like that you use the word individual, because I think this is one of the biggest takeaways I've had in phase four. I am now in relationship with myself as much as I am in relationship with my spouse.
Mm. Yes.
When I look back, my marriage was enmeshed with my identity.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is not.
Yes.
I cannot articulate how this has changed me to the core. Mm-hmm. I walk around my house physically. I walk around in my head. Mentally, I walk around in my body emotionally and energetically completely different than I ever did before. So now I am in my relationship as an individual, and I know that the Bible says to become one. Yes, they do. This is why this is painful, but not in replacement of who we were created to be.
That's right.
And so I've no longer handed my identity to the status of my relationship or my husband's health or the health of our relationship. That has changed me, folks. I am a whole different person, and I am 100% confident that I can face and come through anything in my life that life brings my way. And now my Enneagram 6 comes up with a bunch of different scenarios. But I am confident that I can.
Wing to your 7. Go to 7. Throw confetti on it.
But I am now confident because I walk around with a wholeness of myself. Mm-hmm. After going through this phase.
Well said.
Beautiful, Jen.
I love this conversation because I still can't clearly articulate what all of this is, but maybe you can put it into a sentence, like the quote from Jake Porter earlier, what is this magic? And here's what I'm loving. When I was reading your phases, rebuild in my brain, I'm like, okay, there's the husband and the wife and they're rebuilding their marriage. They're rebuilding how they do life together. And really rebuild isn't that. It's what I'm understanding you to say is that rebuild is about rebuilding your core identity. And right. And that then affects the marriage in good ways and results in rebuilding or maybe restoring the marriage, recovering the marriage. I don't know what R word we want to use there, but it's really about the betrayed spouse and maybe the addict. Is that the right term that we're using these days? The struggling spouse. So it's really more about us as the betrayed spouse rebuilding, and then that effort or that result is going to have a positive effect on the relationship. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. And I think you're talking about the people who are on the track of redemption, right? But there's also women who are on the track of divorce that are in rebuild,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and there's the women in the track of that. So it's like, apart from, phase four doesn't deal with the relationship at all, really. Mm. It deals with yourself. This is your one life to live. How do you want it to look? Whether that's with your spouse, or whether that's not, whether it's you get remarried, whether it's you remain single, no matter what, you can have a great life and a meaningful life, no matter what happened with your relationship.
Mm-hmm. Joy is coming. Good life, dreams realized, goals accomplished, fun, happiness, all the things are coming no matter what the outcome of the relationship. That gives so much hope. Yeah. Thank you.
So with that, Tammy, do you mind giving us some closing words of encouragement today to our listeners?
Yeah, I would just say, no matter what phase you are in right now, as you're listening, keep going. Mm-hmm. Keep going. I wish there was a way to fast track you. I wish there was a way to jump, and there isn't. But you're not alone in this process. And there are a lot of amazing women who have gone through this process and are who are going through this process, and they're out there and you can get support with that. But just know, like I love that we end on phase four and whatnot. I want you to know that it's there, that it is possible. When I started this phase, I had no idea it was even possible to get to the other side. And so knowing that somebody else had done it, I was like, maybe, just maybe, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. And you can. So keep going.
Love it. You know, I'm going to put you on the spot because this interview hasn't put you on the spot at all ever, right? So would you share with our listeners one of your favorite ways of self-care, part of your rebuild phase? Talk to them about skydiving, would you?
Oh, right. I was like, whew. I love being set up for that. That's fantastic. So I am a licensed skydiver, but it's actually indoor skydiving is my passion. And that I started, the first time I stepped in an iFly tunnel was 2.5, almost 3 years ago. And I was instantly hooked. I came out of there and I felt like every cell in my body had come alive. I was like, oh, that's right. This is what fun is. I forgot what fun felt like. And so that was between indoor skydiving. It's just my passion. I love it. And I had never done it before. That and the fascia work of getting my nervous system to calm down, because it was on fire for about 6 years. Those two things have really transformed me, and life now feels so much better. But I would say, fun, go find fun. Mm. No matter where you're in the process, go find fun. It'll remind you that you are alive and that there is life outside of the trenches. Uh-huh. But yeah, oh my gosh. And if you haven't gone indoor skydiving, you got to go. It's so much fun.
Oh, you can hear the passion. She's a little excited about this. That's great. Thank you. That was great. Yeah, I love what you said there. Go find what works for you and something that's invigorating and something novel and something that maybe you haven't done before, but you've always been curious about. And who knows, take that friend up on that invite to go do something. You're like, what? I would never jump out of a perfectly good plane.
I think it would be fun to have a recovering spouse iFly national event.
Ooh, right?
Wouldn't that be fun?
Can you make that happen, please?
Yes.
Okay. That'd be great. Yeah. Or at the very least, we can meet up with you in Colorado and have a whole get together.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. Tammy, thank you. You need to know that you are absolutely going to be asked to come back again and again. This just
I'd love
just,
to.
It's great. Thank you. Such rich conversations. And I'm excited for the next conversation because this one was so rich. I've taken a whole bunch of notes. I'll put them in the show notes. And before I close this out, could you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you or where they can find your information, please?
Yeah, best way is through my website, which is betrayalhealing.com. And yeah, all sorts of info there.
And when is your next conference? It's virtual. Lady, she has an amazing becoming, like every year it gets bigger and bigger and far more known. When is your next conference happening?
Yeah, it's the Betrayal Healing Conference, and the next one will be the end of January. So okay. They will
2025.
Be 2025, that's right.
Okay, we're looking forward to that. Thanks, friends. With that, thank you for tuning in today and being a part of our podcast community. Your support is so valuable, and we are here to serve you. So thank you again for listening, and you know, be sure to like, subscribe, rate, share. You know what you're doing. But this helps change the algorithm with all of the socials, and it helps bring our information kind of to the top of the surface and allows other women to find the information and help that they might need that might be here on this podcast. So thank you for that. If you would like to contact us, you can reach us at thebrtpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget that we've got that contest going on. So if you leave a review on whatever platform you listen to the podcast, screenshot that and email it to us at that Gmail account I just mentioned. When we get 25 reviews, we will draw a name and send you a great self-care package. And we're going to be giving away a copy of The Betrayal Bind by Michelle Mays. And as soon as Tammy writes a book, then we will be giving her book away to all of you. So we'll just keep this contest going. On that note, have a wonderful day, everyone. We hope to hear from you, and we will see you next time. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast with your hosts, Chris Rocha and Jen Howie. We hope you've been helped and encouraged. If you value the content we shared today, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps others find the show. Need personalized guidance? Please contact Chris or Jen for transformative coaching. This episode has been brought to you by HealingWithTheHowies.com, WatermarkCoach.com, and with the support of Pure Life Alliance Ministries.